live from Burbank, California, where road rage is all the rage. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's unsafe at any speed, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, lurking conservatives. Did I forget one there? Working class heroes.
Pain sponges.
Pain sponges, need machines, the whole lot of you. Road rage is right, Jim. Road rage is right. I tell you, my wife doesn't seem to think that buying the anger management book was taking an action. As we laid there in bed last night and I was perusing it, trying to figure out if I fit any of the character descriptions of an angry person, which I do.
You need to have somebody objective look at that.
I was. Oh, now you're telling me to go to therapy too? Is that what you're doing? How about a little bit?
You've been to therapy before. It's nothing new for you.
No, I was in therapy for years, and my wife says to me frequently, she says, I cannot believe you did not deal with anger in therapy. I think I did, but I never isolated it. I wasn't at a point in my life where I could isolate it. And I'll tell you something. There's a lot to be angry at. It's just not necessarily you or my wife or that guy in the car in front of me, but I understand how people can succumb to road rage, because it's not about whatever's going on the highway. It's because we go through life just simmering cauldrons of resentment and bitterness and hostility just by virtue of the lives a lot of people have to lead. I agree
100%.
And I think that one of the reasons that people get sick is you have to spend so much time in your life pretending like you like people. Pretending like you like people out of protocol, out of politeness, out of a need to keep jobs or what have you, it's cancerous. And I think that all of that resentment and that spite and that hostility, sometimes there's a breaking point. I can see how it can happen on the highway. It's interesting to me that one of the few areas that my anger is not as prominent as it once was is on the highway. And I find that I am more prone to road rage if somebody else is in the car. I don't know about you, but if there's an audience for my anger, I'm much more prone to lash
out.
You're
just a ham.
Like a child. Yes, I'm an anti-ham. It's not an anti-ham. It's like a dark ham.
You're an attention sponge.
Well, I think that most of us, by virtue of the fact that you're sitting behind a microphone doing anything, and that I happen to be hosting a radio show or a comic, makes us attention sponges.
Nobody's listening to me right now. I'm not even listening to me.
Well, that's a self-esteem issue we can get into if you'd like. I'm not a professional, but I'd be more than happy to explore it with you.
Yeah, hey, I think you're absolutely right about the pain thing. However, you know, there are a lot of people on the highway who really deserve to be taken out. I'm not recommending that. I'm not telling anybody to go out right now and take somebody out on the road.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who do deserve it, especially people in, you know, like SUVs.
Mm-hmm.
Who cut people off,
and they can't stay in a lane because they don't understand how big their car is.
Gas guzzlers.
Some of those cars should come with training. You should have to be enrolled with some sort of military trainer.
What do you do before you make a left turn?
I try to make a signal unless there's someone. If there's not anyone behind me, sometimes I'll just whiz it.
And then you
what?
You
slow down.
You look over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To see if someone's there.
Right. And then you look in your mirror.
Right.
Nobody does that. They deserve to be taken out.
It's not like
taken out. Don't let them stop. Don't let them go to the donut store first. Take them out.
You're talking about the old days.
I'm saying take them out as in ask them for a date.
Yeah, but I'm talking like when people actually care. But I have a harder time with slow drivers or people that just slowly drift into your lane. I'd like to congratulate the Dixie Chicks for getting their album debuted at number one despite all of the criticism. All of the red state hatred did not stop this album. Now, I don't know the album. I'm just happy that they were able to culturally reinvent themselves and grow up a little as former red state country chicks into somebody into women that actually have a point of view that they stood by, changed their image. Granted, it may be all about publicity. It might be all about
or a hit.
Whoever designed it or a hit. That's fine. But I think it's a phenomenal thing culturally where you have women who have a voice, who made a statement, who didn't back down, who then reinvented their image, and with the help of Rick Rubin, who's no slouch in the booth in terms of producing a record, have really surfaced as winning this thing, and I think it's beautiful. That's all. I'm very, very touched by it. Another thing that I find disconcerting and strange, I don't know if you saw this, I'm sure you did, Jim, is that I went and saw Al Gore's film, and I don't think I got into it. I think I made a joke about it yesterday, and I don't think that I did it justice.
I've not seen it yet.
Well, you probably know a lot of what is in there. He is really making a case for the fact, the scientific fact, that we're in trouble. And he's able to do it historically, scientifically. He's able to, because of scientific evidence, go back thousands and thousands of years earlier than anyone anticipated to sort of judge and see how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere, how these gases have escalated, how human consumption and human behavior has caused this escalation. And he makes a profound and compelling case, and it's a dark vision that he's promoting. But, you know, he does, at the end of it, you do feel somewhat hopeful and feel like you want to take part. I don't know. I a lot of the things that weren't covered in Al Gore's discussion were things that you talked about, some of the environmental issues revolving around agribusiness. Mm. But it does seem what is happening now, not unlike the internet, it seems to me, and I'm all for it, if Al Gore is going to come out a little further down the line, throw his hat in for a presidential bid and run on reinvigorating the American economy based on creating alternate fuels to oil, i.e., some of these agri-based fuels, ethanol, or some of the corn-based fuels, or electricity. I'm all for it. If he's actually,
I'd vote for him for that boring wood lump. I'd vote for him in a second. There's nobody better. Maybe Kerry, but I don't know what he stands for right now. Except, hey, I'm going to defend my Swift vote.
Yeah, well, he's trying to save. He's trying to clear up his own character issues with the slander that was put upon him during the race. But I think that this is the way to look at this. Is this could be a tremendous growth industry, this alternative fuel industry and the electric car industry. They killed the electric car. They've had the technology to have fully effective electric cars for years.
100 years ago. Oh, 200 years ago, by the way.
Well, now, but they whiz. I mean, they go fast, yeah. And they're consistent, and they've got designs.
Let's talk about the steam car.
Well, I mean, the electric car is good. Can we start with that? The electric
sure,
car, the steam car, that boggles me. There's water involved and hissing and sounds.
No, there's no hissing. There's no blowing up of boilers. None of that. It's all myth.
But here's the question I was going to ask you. Today, in the newspapers, there's an article that was released that say that scientists say that the Arctic was once tropical.
Well, hell, you know, everything was once tropical.
But what, doesn't it questionable why this gets press and that why they find that, you know, several scientists say their findings are a glimpse backward into a much warmer than thought of polar region, that all of a sudden when we have all this conversation, cultural conversation, national conversation about climate change, about our part in it, that this would come out right now, and I see it today. I wonder if it's going to gain any momentum. I saw it on Drudge, and of course he had the sort of like hey, maybe it was warmer.
Yeah.
If they use this as a disclaimer.
How many millions of years ago?
Yeah, but still, the scientists are clear to point out that it was a miserable time. Water was everywhere. Mosquitoes were the size of birds. And this is not a climate that we want to live in right now. Changing gears, we have a great show today. We have we're going to be talking to Mike Boettcher, the NBC News correspondent in Iraq. He's been on the show once before. There's a lot of things coming out of Iraq. I want to talk about the 1,500 redeployed troops that are heading up into the Anbar province, which is where Haditha is, which is where this massacre was. The Anbar province, I want to talk about in depth with him a little bit, because that's where Fallujah is. That's where Abu Ghraib was. This is an uncontrollable, wild, just a chaos land up there. I also want to talk to him a little bit about some of his comrades who were killed on Monday. We have on the show Jay Babcock, who's the editor-in-chief of Arthur Magazine, who had an encounter with this guy, Sully Irma, the lead singer from Godsmack.
Very smart man.
He's a moron. And he's like, he's got that thick lughead New England sound that I used to play to those guys all the time when I lived up in Boston. I'm not going to judge him on that. We'll have some clips from that interview. We'll have Jay in here to talk about what went down. Dan Millman, who was on the schedule a while back, is going to be here. He's the author of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. He's going to talk about the film. And Dave Diane, D-Day Dave, from DaveDiane.com, a very proficient and smart blogger and also a comic who I met oddly in the hallway of the Improv. So there's a lot on the table here. I'd like to know a little bit about some other stuff. Maybe Dave and we can work through it. But we will talk about Haditha with the Haditha massacre with Dave and with Mike Boettcher. Because I heard on Ed Schultz today they were trying to spin it a certain way. Now, he wasn't trying to spin it. But this is a weird sort of gray area because you got guy like Paul Hackett, the lawyer, the guy who ran for Congress in Ohio. He was a vet. Where you have people who are not going to be so quick to jump on, you know, blaming these guys. Now, I'm trying not to view it as you know, they should take these guys to task. They should. If there was a crime committed, if there was murder committed, someone should have to pay. But I see it as a systemic problem, and I see it as being emblematic of an engagement that is unwinnable the way that it is going on right now. Emblematic of a civil war, of a problem with the way the war is being conducted, and a surefire indication that we are failing there, given the amount of deaths and given this horrendous act of payback murder. Which is what I think it is. I mean, the jury's out, obviously, but that's what I think it was. So let's shift gears. We don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here today is version one of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. In a major policy shift, Condoleezza Rice says the United States is prepared to hold direct talks with Iran on its nuclear program if Iran first agrees to stop activities that could lead to a bomb. There's been talk that Bush might attack Iran with nuclear weapons, but Washington insiders say it's just a bluff and would only happen if it looks like he's going to lose the House. Rising levels of greenhouse gases are accelerating poison ivy growth, a new study reports. In a related story, if you think you hate locusts now, just wait, because there's going to be... Dutch pedophiles are launching a political party to push for a cut in the legal age for sexual relations to 12 from 16, and the legalization of child pornography and sex with animals. They call their group the Charity, Freedom, and Diversity Party because the Society for Screwing Animals and Children didn't look as good on a banner.
I can understand that.
Sure, man. That's the short order news for now. I told you who's going to be on the show. Tomorrow we got Greg Palast coming in. But we've got a lot to talk about. I think you might have some poetry coming up. Is that true, maybe? Maybe we'll do a little of that.
Possible.
The Haditha Massacre is at the tip of my brain. So stay with us. Got a lot to do today.
And now, he was once tropical, Mark Maron.
I'd love to be tropical. I don't like it to be balmy, though. I love heat. I want to go to the desert. I've already planned to go to the desert. I'm going to Joshua Tree. I'm going to go to Joshua
Tree. Sounds very Jewish.
No, you've never been out there? You got to go out there.
I have, but my parents probably didn't want me to stick around there.
Oh, yeah. You got to go out there. It's so beautiful. It's outside of Palm Desert. I'm going to go out there and sweat it out, you know, starve myself, wander through the desert for a few days, get lost. And
Befriend the horned toad.
Yeah, and have... Huh?
The horned toad.
Sure. And they shoot blood out of their eyes if you scare them. And then have a cathartic realization in the middle of the desert that's going to tell me what to do with the future of my life.
Turn you into a Christian.
And who I am.
Like St. Jerome.
Do I have to have that one? Aren't there a number of different cathartic, spiritual...
No, only Christian.
No, there's all kinds you can have. Yeah, if I leave myself open to any number of strange wood spirits and ground... imps.
It all turns into you being tortured by demons.
That's fine. That's fine. But I don't know if I need to go the Christian route with that.
Tempted.
I'm tortured by demons on a day-to-day basis. You know, if I just squint my eyes a little bit and look in the booth and look at you, I'm being tortured by demons right now. All right, look, I'm glad we have this option now, but we're taking calls to a select few that can get the number off the website. So we have a call from Steve in West Hollywood. You're on the air with Mark Maron, Steve.
Hey, Mark, it's actually John Zach, the NSA guy, has been tapping your phones. Listen, like I told you, I'm kind of a comedian myself, so I've been picking up a few things, listening to, you know, the Hollywood phone calls, and heard your show this week, and as they say in the industry, I have notes.
Oh, man.
You know what people like? Mm-hmm. People like puppets. Mm. Now, I know it's radio, but... Tell that to Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, right?
Look, Zach.
Second point, Jim Earl as your sidekick. I don't know. He brings a negative energy. Don't you think he brings a negative energy? Mm. You need somebody to counteract your own negative energy, not to reinforce it.
So I should dump Jim.
Yeah. Huh? What?
In the industry, we don't like the word dump. You know, reconfigure him. Reconfigure him to somewhere outside the show.
Who are you talking to?
I'll handle this, Jim. I'll handle it.
I'm free.
I'll handle it. Wait, that leaves me without a co-host, you know, Zach.
Well, I guess I could be your co-host. Seriously, I could be your co-host.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right, so that guy keeps calling me, saying these other people. Jim, you know, every once in a while I force Jim to write poetry. If you want to address what he said, I would never think about breaking up the team. I would never think about it, Jim.
Yeah, well, you know, if you do, at least give me like 2 weeks' notice and 2 weeks' vacation. Then I'll come back when things really start crumbling.
I'll commit to that. That's fine. I'm not. We're just starting to get to know each other. Just starting to gel.
That guy, that NSA guy.
Screw that guy.
I've known him for years. He's not what you like. He's not what you need.
He's not what you think.
He's not good for you, Mark. He's not good for you like I am.
I'm coming over tonight. All right. Whoa, it's getting weird. We'll do the poetry in a little while. Let's talk about this healthcare thing because I'm about to go off.
Oh, Jesus!
I'm about to go off mine. Mine runs out in June, and I got to start paying Cobra. And you're with Kaiser?
Kaiser. These people are horrible, Mark.
What happened?
Well, you know what? First of all, they're trying to kill a bunch of kidney patients up north in San Francisco. You read all about that. There's a big scandal about them screwing up paperwork and delaying kidney transplants.
Awful.
Because they, you know, the bottom line is nickel and diming everybody out of their last cent and saving money.
And what happened with you?
What happened with me? You know, I'm trying to get a prescription for... Yeah, okay, I'll say it. I have diabetes.
Yes, we know.
And blood test strips.
Yes.
And they want to know exactly how many I use a month. And you cannot tell somebody that. You have no idea how much you use per month.
Yeah.
And they will not give me enough per month unless I tell them the exact number. Sometimes it's 10 more or 20 more or 20 less. And if I tell them the wrong number, then when the end of the month comes around, I'll be short some.
But what the hell? They
risking my health. And because of that,
yeah.
they won't give you extra supplies.
That's ridiculous. What do they think you're going to do with those things? Like there's some sort of underground bootleg market on blood test strips?
Evidently. You know they're going to save money by doing that, by making you call up and degrade yourself and humiliate yourself. And say, yes, I guess I use this amount. I have 5 glasses of water per day, but sometimes I have 6 or 7. Can I please have 8? You know, and that's the philosophy of Kaiser Permanente.
The nickel and diamond guys like you. This is why we need a functional national health policy for. You know, people are going out of country to get surgery now. Dan Millman, author of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, in just a second.
This moment is the only thing that matters.
That is of course, is the human weathered mountain that is Nick Nolte in the new film, The Peaceful Warrior. The Way of the Peaceful Warrior is one of those books that people who are unhappy with their life for any number of reasons find hope and guidance. I personally don't go in for these books, but certainly I am open to ideas. My brother lives for books like these. It is a hugely popular book. The author, Dan Millman, gives seminars and tours the country, spreading the way. And now there is a movie, which you just heard Nick Nolte from, that Dan Millman scripted. Welcome to the show, Dan Millman.
Thanks, Mark. I'm with you. Who wants hope and ideas anyway?
Well, you know, if I had too much hope and ideas, I don't know where I would come from. But this is what I want to talk to you about. I like understand. Like I read books on psychology. I read books on a lot of stuff. You know, I'm a recovery person, but I still am closed off to hope and in some respects. But I do accept the human condition.
Absolutely, and that was the best description I ever heard of Nick Nolte, the weathered mountain.
Yeah, the human weathered mountain.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know, if you could, tell me, like, this moment, give me a little advice, Dan. You do this for a living. What would be the first thing you would tell a guy like me that's, I'm slightly neurotic, I have anger issues, and I think I self-sabotage?
Oh, should we just start there?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this. As far as anger issues, anger is not a problem. I don't think this anger is a problem at all. It's what we do when we're angry that can be the problem. Anger is natural, like the weather passing. I feel angry sometimes. We ought to feel angry sometimes.
Okay.
So I don't see that as a problem. But, of course, the peaceful warrior's way, as I describe it, is focused on what we do. Despite whether we're motivated or shy or confident or not feeling good about ourselves, our life is still going to be shaped by what we do moment to moment. So
yeah.
I try to be pretty practical and realistic. You know, somebody came up to me once after a seminar and said, Dan, I feel so inspired. I said, don't worry, it'll pass.
That's true. That's
yeah, it's true. So people seem to think I have some common sense because I try to talk down to earth and realistically. I'm not one of those kind of big abstract ideas, idealistic notions. Maybe that's what you meant by hope. You know, these motivational people who give you a lot of good feelings, and then when they walk away, it starts to fade immediately.
Yeah, I was a genius this weekend, and it went away. I understand what you're saying, and I want to know how the process from this book that is hugely popular. It's just one of those things. Like some people read those books, other people read books about, by Freud. There's a different approach, but your book has made a tremendous impact on a lot of people. My board up here, Laughing Andy, read your book in high school, and I think it changed him. He can't quite figure out how, but I think it did change him. And now it's a movie. Now, when you scripted the movie, what was the biggest challenge?
Well, I worked 10 years on the script for the movie, but actually, ironically, they didn't see my script until 2 weeks before the movie started. They
uh-huh.
already had other people working on it, and the director, to his credit, was able to slip in about 10 pages of material seamlessly into the movie. Adapting a book, especially one like mine, which has kind of a lot of message in it, is like adapting a painting to a sculpture or a cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make changes. But the reason I'm talking to you now and I've been doing promotion for the movie, I'm not connected to it financially directly at all. I just think they did a great job. And, most authors get grumpy about the way their stuff's adapted. And I think they really captured the heart, the message, and the spirit of the film. Have you had a chance to see it?
Yeah, I watched a good part of it. I know that Nick Nolte plays Aristotle, and he's sort of a almost like a shapeshifter, almost like a mythical character.
Well, Aristotle, Archimedes, I call him Socrates, actually. When I met him in that gas station, based on a real old guy I met, a one starry night in 1966, walking home from a date.
Socrates, yeah, sorry.
In the morning.
Yeah.
And I wandered into the gas station, and this guy wouldn't tell me his name, but he reminded me immediately of that old Greek sage Socrates.
Mm-hmm.
So I started calling him that, and that's based on fact. I mean, a lot of my book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, is based on autobiographical material, but there are also fictional elements woven in for the sake of the story. And, the movie, they claim at the start, inspired by true events, which absolutely is accurate.
Yeah, I have had people in my life that have made that kind of impact. They almost take a mythical presence in your memory, and their importance to your rites of passage is immeasurable.
Exactly.
Maybe I should write a book about that. I don't know. But that's not what we're talking about. So you're telling me you're not making any dough from this movie? You got to have a little financial interest in it.
No. Well, you understand that as an author, obviously it's wonderful for the book. More
yeah.
people will hear about the book, and that's what I do is I write books. But look, what do I want to look back on? That I sold this many books or I made this much money, or look back and say my book, which affected a lot of people, was turned into a movie that reached out to even more people who might not even read the book. You know, kids in malls. This might offer some good reminders. I call it cinema with substance.
Yeah.
There are a lot of dessert movies, and there's nothing wrong with them. It's like the kind of movie you have fun, you're diverted for a while, you walk out of the theater. Pretty much it's history 5 minutes after you walk out. This movie, I think people will walk out with something, they're not even sure what sometime, but remembering scenes and images and ideas that they may actually take with them, and that's not really typical in a movie.
I think you're right. Now, let me ask you some practical advice from some of your teachings, if I could.
Sure.
What do you think on a day-to-day basis that most people don't realize and they should realize that they should be doing?
Well, I think I can respond to that in maybe a sideways way. That is, the biggest issue most of us have in life,
mm-hmm.
whether we're talking quote-unquote spiritual stuff or just everyday practical things,
yeah.
taking care of ourselves, is turning what we know into what we actually do.
Mm.
We know all this stuff. Everybody knows it's good to do moderate, regular exercise, eat a balanced diet, get enough rest. But how many of us actually do that on a regular basis?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about some perfection, some monk-like diet and habits. I'm just talking about getting enough exercise, balanced diet, enough rest, just the basics. And so what I've found is ways to communicate to people to help them to do that. And, for example, if someone were to ask me, okay, Dan, how do I turn what I know into what I actually do?
Yeah.
And what I suggest is it's great to dream big. You know, it's nice to have big dreams rather than small ones, but we need to start small and then connect the dots. So, for example, people who say, I'd like to exercise, I mean to, you know, go to a gym or whatever.
Right.
I suggest they get up tomorrow morning and do one jumping jack, and the next day get up and do one jumping jack, and do that every day in the next month.
Right, because we get defeated by thinking we're going to do a bunch of things. Like if you say, like, I need to go to the gym to lose 50 pounds, you're only like 5 minutes away from going, I'm exhausted, I'm never going to do that.
Right.
So if you just start slow and let it build, that's the moment-to-moment thing.
Practice moment-to-moment. Life's a series of moments. You were saying that before. See, I've never met an intelligent person. I've only met people who have more intelligent moments. I've had some of those. I've also had some pretty stupid moments. You know, that's realistic. I mean,
I'll tell you, honestly, I envy people that just are reflexive and don't even think twice. They just live right in the moment, and they don't carry the burden of self-consciousness. But sometimes they don't have self-awareness either.
That's true. You know that saying, Mark, the two mistakes we can make is thinking without acting and acting without thinking. I mean, there's a balance there, and this is what I call the peaceful warrior's way, which is really, you know, bringing a peaceful heart and a warrior spirit into life. We need both at times.
But aren't some people irritating and deserve to be yelled at?
Yeah, maybe sometimes, sure. That's pretty natural.
But is that the way of the peaceful warrior? Is that the way of the immature, neurotic child warrior?
No, I think that's the way of a natural person. Let me give an example.
Yeah.
You know, I used to think my wife of 30 years, my bride of 30 years, Joy,
yeah.
I used to think she was criticizing me, but then I realized, no, she was improving me. I think that's maybe her job description. And there are times she's improving me rather enthusiastically, you know, in my nose-to-nose. And when that happens, sometimes I rise to the occasion and I actually keep eye contact and I listen.
Yeah.
I take in what she's saying and I go, wow, that, you know, I appreciate your sharing that. Do you have anything else to add? But there are other times I do the typical guy thing, which is cross my arms, look away like an adolescent, don't make eye contact, and then slink off to my lair and say, when you calm down, I'll talk to you.
Wow.
And so there are times where I rise to the occasion and times I don't. That's realistic and natural. I'm not going to spout idealistic standards of people and nobody can live up to.
I'll tell you, you're fortunate to be a slinker and not a yeller, because I've had the same encounter with my wife on many occasions, and I would have been better to slink off as opposed to scream and yell, because then it becomes a whole different issue.
Yeah, but making ups can be nice too, huh?
The best, dude. So, but I don't think I should make a habit out of it, because how many times can you pull that off?
True.
Dan, I didn't mean to distract you into the practical elements, but I appreciate you helping me out. And the movie is open, I believe, now, isn't it? Is it
open? Actually, tomorrow on the West Coast, the whole West Coast, Seattle, down to Phoenix, in major cities, it's going to open. On June 1st, there's a special sneak preview. That's tomorrow night. But on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that's the opening weekend. We are so hoping people will come to the theaters. Some people say, I'll wait for the DVD, but I can tell you, for this particular movie, this is not just a bunch of strangers, people stepping over your toes, going to their seat, dropping popcorn on you. This movie is going to be like a communal happening.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And, you know, if people have not heard of the film, and certainly a lot of people who have seen who are familiar with your book, you know, he's going to, you know, they're going to go see it. But just to see old Nick Nolte is always good.
Nick was perfect. I mean, it was like a miracle. It was so fortunate to get him for this role because, as you said, this weathered mountain of a man, nothing sounds preachy out of his mouth, and he brings such heart to it. And Scott Meklowitz, a lot of people haven't heard Scott's name. They don't even know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
They will soon enough. This young guy is so... He had to play in a self-absorbed young gymnast that I was. Life going well for him. But he is so vulnerable and likable that we go along on the ride and kind of learn as we go.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on my show, Dan Millman. It's great talking to you.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So coming up next, Mike Betcher in Iraq, NBC News correspondent. So we're going to take a big shift and talk to Mike about what's happening there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
He's full of coffee and peanuts, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Folks, let's shift gears a little bit here. On Monday, CBS cameraman Paul Douglas and freelance soundman James Brolin were killed in Iraq. CBS correspondent Kimberly Dozer was critically injured. War journalists are heroes who go unsung these days because our president is anti-news. It really brings home the fact that no one is safe over there in Iraq, and there are people in the media willing to risk their lives to get the news out there. NBC News correspondent Mike Betcher is one of those journalists. He's been on our show before and is in Iraq now. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Hey, Mark, it's great to be back. Believe me, it's great.
I know.
Not to be back in Iraq, but it's great to be back on the show.
Well, I'm glad you're safe over there, and I know you knew those people that were killed on Monday, and I'm sorry for your loss. What happened, from what you understand, to those folks?
Well, you know, they were on an embed and were on a patrol that was in south central Iraq, just south of Baghdad. And Kimberly and the crew got out of the car. We're still not sure why. You know, it could have been for anything. I mean, it could have been to look for the patrol stopped to look for something suspicious on the side of the road. When they got out, a bomb went off, and it killed James and Paul immediately. And Kimberly luckily survived, and we hope she survives. And you know, it's always, yeah, I got to tell you, it's hit all of us hard here.
Yeah.
I just saw Kimberly on Saturday,
I'll tell you,
we were talking about her mom. It's hard for me to talk about this, frankly.
Well, we don't have to go too far into it. I just wanted to say that I'm sorry for your loss, and that, you know, to bring up to the point to everybody listening that you guys are just so brave to do what you do, and you don't really always get the credit you should. And this is part of what's happening over there, and that it's really just not safe anywhere. I mean, if we can move into some current events, I mean, it seems like they're moving about 1,500 troops from reserve in Kuwait up to the Anbar province. And it just seems to me, Mike, if I'm not mistaken, things are worse than they ever have been there in some ways.
Well, if you look at, you know, Ramadi, most of those troops will go to Anbar province, as you said. And Ramadi is a tough, tough place, let me tell you. You know, going to the government center from the main U.S. base there, which is the Camp Diamond,
mm-hmm.
is one, you know, quick little ride, and people at full speed going in. And then the government center, you can't even go outside there because of the threat from snipers. I mean, it is a tough place. What has happened is, after Fallujah in December of 2004, the insurgents moved that direction to Ramadi, which is the capital of Anbar, and it's a tough place.
Yeah.
And you know, what we're hearing is that they don't want, and I say by they, the U.S. military does not want to launch another operation like they did in Fallujah in December 2004. But there are a lot of areas in Ramadi that they've taken control of, and something's up.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Haditha, because that's in the Anbar province, and it's becoming clear from a couple investigations that some Marines massacred 24 civilians in Haditha back in November. It's seeming like it may have been payback for losing one of their friends. Do you have any new news on this, or has it hit the streets of Iraq, and what effect is it having?
You know, I got to tell you, civilians are killed every day here. There were two women killed today, a woman driving another woman to a hospital to have a baby, and she was killed at a checkpoint. So these sorts of things happen every day. And frankly, on the streets in Iraq and in Baghdad, the reaction from people, I think they're more numb than angry. I mean, certainly if what happened in Haditha happened, and there's a lot of indication that it did, then people in this country, it will only erode their support for the United States and the U.S. military here. But it happens every day, and people are just numb.
Right.
In a sense, Mark, in a sense, we're numb.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good. I mean, you fight not to be numb.
Yeah.
You fight to be indignant about everything.
Yeah. Can you confirm any of this talk I've heard about ex-Baathist officers aligning themselves with Al-Qaeda?
No, I can't confirm that, but what I can confirm, because I've been working on this issue for a long time, is it's not a new story.
Yeah.
It's an old story.
Yeah.
And ex-Baathist officers have aligned themselves with Al-Qaeda for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a separation.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest problem, Mark,
yeah,
is if Iran decides to turn on the spigot, which they have in Basra, in terms of another insurgency, which is a Shiite insurgency as opposed to a Sunni insurgency, then we got real problems.
Wow, because then that escalates a civil war.
Yes. It creates a civil war, but it has the U.S. being attacked on both sides.
Oh, that's just
a Sunni insurgency in the west and one in the south.
It's just awful. And I guess that this new Prime Minister Maliki he's vowed to crack down on these gangs in Basra. I mean, what he's really talking about is the struggle between the Sunnis and the Shias that are out of control of the government.
Basra is a predominantly Shiite city, and during the invasion, I was embedded with special forces into Basra. And at that point, there were a significant number of Iranian operatives working there. They controlled that city then. They control that city now, frankly,
in
terms of what's going on there. And it is a matter of right now down there, it's the exposure of British troops, and they're finding this out now.
Wow.
And they control the spigot on the Civil War, I believe.
Mike, we're running out of time here. It's great to check in with you and say hi to your lovely wife. I'm glad that everything worked out with her.
Well, for 2 months during her recuperation, when we drove, she would podcast your show. I'd have to listen to it on iTrip on the radio for 2 months. So I have heard more of your shows than you have. And, you do a great job.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike.
So call me anytime here. You need whatever you need. We'll tell you.
All right.
Well,
you be careful.
Okay. We'll see you, Mark.
Bye.
And now he's a sensitive artist, Mark Maron.
I was that guy. I killed him. I went inside and I killed the sensitive artist in me, and I became a slightly insensitive, jaded showbiz type.
Well, that only proves you are a sensitive artist, Mark.
It's coming back though, man. I'm working on some things. I'm writing a manifesto of sorts.
Your girly side?
When has that ever gone away?
That Dan Millman. He's
yeah.
making a fortune on that film.
Of course he is.
He's making a fortune.
I'm working on my book. I'm working on The Way of the Slightly Neurotic Angry Warrior.
Nobody's going to go to that film.
What are you talking about?
Nobody's... Are you... That is...
All right.
No.
All right.
That's everybody's life.
I am the mispronouncer. How nice is it for Mike Boettcher to get up at 3 in the morning to talk to us from Iraq, out of respect for his lovely wife, who's been a fan of you and I's for years now, and who we helped, See, I'm happy that everything's okay there, because she had the surgery and we helped her out. Remember, we said hi to her in the hospital and
that's right.
And she's helping us out by talking her husband into being on our show, and we're helping him out.
Talking about all the brave
points at home,
correspondents and news people out there, and
it was great.
Don't leave Geraldo out of that.
Hey, come on, I don't. You know what? Let him do what he's going to do. I have problems with him though. I'm so glad we're able to take calls now. We've got a call from Jane in Eagle Rock. Jane?
Hey, Mark. It's actually John Zach, the NSA guy, has been tapping your phone calls. Hey, what exactly were you arguing with your wife about last night? You know, I listened for 3 hours, and I couldn't figure out what the problem was.
Yeah, well, look, not that it's any of your business, but she wasn't being very supportive.
Yeah, but you didn't talk about her being supportive. You just screamed about boycotting American Idol.
Well, you know, Zach, I just expect her to...
expect her to read your mind, Mark?
No, I don't.
You know, a couple of the other NSA agents and I have been listening to your private calls for a couple of years now, and we're really starting to see a pattern. You put up walls.
That's absolutely right. He does. We've heard it time and time again.
Wait. Do I have to? I don't have to. I don't have to explain myself to any of you.
Well,
guys.
No, you have to explain it to me. But you have to talk to your wife.
Hi, Mark.
Mishnah, is that you?
It's a conference wiretap.
Agent Zag and I have been talking, and he's really made a lot of things clear to me.
Now, you see, this is the problem. You're not supposed to take sides against me with an NSA agent.
So what I'm hearing from you, Mark, is that you feel betrayed.
Well, yeah.
And what I'm hearing from you, Mishnah, is that Mark isn't letting you in.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be crying.
It's all right. This is a safe space. We have men parachuting in with Kleenex. And, Mark, how does this make you feel? Mark, are you still there?
Enough of that guy. Enough of that. I actually met our next guest, Dave Dayan, in the hallway of the Improv Comedy Club, and we started speaking the alien language of politics in the hallway of a comedy club. And that was hilarious because literally we're standing there, and these two girls came up to us. Now, he's a comic, but he's also a blogger. And I went to his blog after I talked to him. He's the real deal. He's here with us now to talk about some news. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for coming.
That was hilarious. You know, I get into all this stuff because I do the show, and it interests me. And then you started talking. If you talk esoteric, sort of mildly wonkyish politics in a public forum, these women came up and literally stood next to us as if they were going to try and get into the conversation. And one of them just sort of like, I don't know what you're talking about.
She had no entryway.
Yeah, that's what she said, right?
Yeah,
I had no entryway.
Like
it was hilarious. So let's talk about some of this stuff. Now, wait, before we get into the politics, do you stand up as well, right?
Yeah, I do stand up and doing it for way too long.
Yeah,
considering where I'm at.
But what is your background in order to be as politically astute as you are?
I've just been aware for a long time. You know, I think if you just read the papers and not all the papers, but certainly I jumped on the blogs very early.
Yeah,
I think around 2002 or so. I remember through Tom Tomorrow.
Oh yeah,
through the This Modern World site that got me into Coase and Atreus and all that stuff and. And it's slowly becoming too addictive.
Yeah. Tom Tomorrow's been on our show. Kaz has been on our show. He's an angry guy, but a very brilliant satirist, that Tom Tomorrow guy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Supreme Court decision. Because I go to your blog last night, and we take this show, obviously, during the day, and I see this story, and I'm like, how the hell did I miss that? The truth of the matter is, a lot of people miss stuff like this.
It's true.
And this decision is important because it is an indicator of what we can expect from Sam Alito. It's an indicator of what we can expect from the new court. And it's a harbinger of stifling the freedom of people who work within the federal government to have any voice at all.
Absolutely.
What is it exactly?
I believe it was a local case, actually, here in Southern California. It was someone in the district attorney's office who was fired for speaking out, I believe, in the course of a legal trial.
Mm-hmm. A whistleblower.
Yeah, he was a whistleblower, and he was fired for it, and he sued. And the case ended up getting all the way up to the Supreme Court. It was actually... it was argued with O'Connor on the court, and then when Alito was confirmed, it had to be argued again. It seemed like O'Connor was going to go and swing it to protecting the whistleblower. But when they argued it again, yesterday it came out, it was a 5-4 decision with Alito on the side of the winners, that this person who was fired doesn't have protections just because of his employment.
Right.
That he's not able, in fact, to claim whistleblower status, or he's not able to remove himself from harm, I should say, if they penalize him by firing him.
Okay. So this, for future whistleblowers, this means that if you do take that option, if you speak out against some sort of criminality going on in the workplace or against some sort of unethical behavior, that you are at risk. the employer is not at risk, and that and actually who you talk to about it could be at risk as well if it's a reporter.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that this is specifically applicable to government employees, because the case was a government case.
Right.
It was with a city employee.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all of the things with CIA agents being fired, like Mayor McCarthy, you know, people in the NSA talking about their various
communication breakdown.
You know, like
sure.
like you're the guys were talking to you.
Sure, sure.
You know, all of that stuff. Basically, we're saying that you're not protected, and there is an exception made. Basically, in the main opinion, Kennedy said that Justice Kennedy said that, you know, there are other whistleblower protections out there, and of course you can always go to the press. Mm-hmm. However, concurrently with this, we've had the Attorney General come out and say that we're going to prosecute reporters if they even accept information that is classified, yet alone report on it. So basically, they've put up a moat. They've taken the drawbridge out and put up a moat that allows them to, and by they I mean the federal government, and with the Supreme Court's help, is putting up a moat that sort of allows them to do what they want and then claim secrecy, state secrets, to sort of get away with it. You know, I mean, and there's another series of cases in terms of state secrets where the government is trying to shut down trials that are going on right now, particularly the one regarding the NSA wiretapping program, because they say that any kind of discovery in court, any kind of releasing of that information will be, you know, giving out state secrets. So they are invoking the state secrets privilege and trying to shut down trials. So no judicial review, no Fourth Estate watching, nobody watching.
So there's absolutely no shot of transparency when it comes to what's going on. So they're overreaching. They're absolutely overreaching with this secrecy thing. Even if it's not a national security threat or anything else, they're just overreaching with it to completely insulate the federal government from any outside intrusion or any inside, what would you call it? Now, I don't want to call it ratting, but inside intrusion.
Right, whistleblower protection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get on to something else so we don't run out of time with you.
Sure.
We're talking to Dave Dayen. You can go to davedayen.com, DaveDayen.com. There's a link to it on my site, markmaron.com. So a military probe has found that 24 civilians were killed by Marines in what looks to be a payback massacre. On your blog, you've collected some information that shows a pattern that led up to this situation. I thought that was pretty insightful for you to collect the articles that you had, that there was actually a reporter who was talking to people in the Anbar province, to Marines, that said that Marines have never been deployed this many times over and over again, that their mental status was not being checked when they were redeployed, right? And that many of them were on the verge of cracking because this was their fourth or fifth tour of duty.
Right. Yeah, Tom Lasseter wrote a story in August, which was about 3 months before the Haditha massacre actually even happened, that is at editorandpublisher.com. You could probably find that article.
Yeah.
Basically, interviewed some of these soldiers that said, we're about to crack. We're out here in 115 degrees. We don't really know the enemy. We are, you know, kind of on the verge of cracking. And it's not surprising considering, yes, some of the other things. The Hartford Current came out with an article last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, that said that, you know, soldiers aren't even being really checked for mental illness. They have to fill out a form and check a box. And if it checks a box that says you're not mentally ill, okay, off you go. And if that's why there's an increase in suicides right now among soldiers in Iraq. And, you know, there's also stories of soldiers being loaded up with Prozac and sending them out into the field.
Yeah, it's endemic to the way that the military is structured right now. I think that this whole thing, you know, if these guys murdered these people in cold blood, they should be, you know, tried and punished for that. But when this kind of stuff starts happening, not unlike Vietnam, to me, it's an indication that this war is not winnable. Yeah. It is not being fought properly, and it can't be engaged in anymore. Something has to give. If they're juicing these guys up and sending them into combat, all, you know, hopped up on antidepressants so they don't have feelings anymore, the price to pay is extreme.
Yeah. It's the policy.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And that's what Murtha said. And,
yep.
And it's not just the fact that they're not checking for mental illness or anything. I read a story in the Los Angeles Times last week where they've been giving out $500 million in bonuses to get people to re-enlist.
Wow. This again. Is Dave Dayan has been our guest. We're going to do it again some other day. DaveDayan.com. We'll talk to who we got. We got Jay Babcock from Arthur Magazine coming in next. Thanks.
Back to a guy who's got your social security number, Mark Maron.
Yeah, that's Godsmack. That's what we're going to talk to.
I know all about
Godsmack.
We're going
to talk to Jay Babcock about Godsmack in just a minute. I never even heard of these bands. You know, Dave Dayan, the guy who was in here just before talking politics, has put an amazing amount of pressure on himself. He felt bad that he didn't feel like he represented himself as a comedian.
Right.
So we're actually going to have him come back in the last segment of the show to be funny.
Sure. It's
something he did to himself.
It's always good to follow talking about massacres with a couple of jokes.
That's the challenge, Jim.
You know, hey, I'm used to it.
You know, I wasn't expecting him to be funny, but he apparently expects it out of himself, and I appreciate that because I know what that's like, and we're going to have him come in, and maybe and that'll happen. Let's take this call from Helene in Claremont. Helene, how are you?
Hey, Mark. It's actually John Zach, the NSA guy, has been tapping your phone calls.
Well, what do you want?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. Just hanging out. Figured I'd call. What are you up to?
I'm right in the middle of a show.
Oh, yeah, right.
Don't you have any work to do, or?
No, it's my day off.
Oh.
Yeah, I never really know what to do with myself on my day off. So I'm just hanging out in my apartment. This place is too big for me, really.
Uh-huh.
It's not that I'm divorced. I just never really formed any lasting relationships, you know?
Yeah, I got to get back to the show.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I don't want to be a bother.
So we should hang up.
Yeah. Okay. See you then.
Are you still on the line?
Yeah. Why? What's up? You want to come over?
I can't believe that guy. Enough is enough already. Folks, Arthur Magazine is a totally free bi-monthly publication with a circulation of about 60,000. It covers music and culture both from the margins. Music and culture from the margins, where things can be seen clearly. Jay Babcock has been publishing the magazine with his partner, Laris Kreswins. Am I pronouncing that right, Jay?
That's right, yeah.
Since the fall of 2002, they've recently changed from newspaper to magazine format, so things are good.
Things are going good, yeah.
During a May 1st interview with Sully Erna, the lead singer of Godsmack, Jay Babcock called him out on his allowing Godsmack's music to be used in commercials for the military to recruit. Now, they got paid for this, and we have some sound from that we're going to play here, and Jay will talk about it after we hear this.
So, I noticed you guys have been really involved with promoting the military.
Well, they actually came to us, believe it or not. Somebody in the Navy loves this band because they used Awake for 3 years, and then they came to us and re-upped the contract for another 3 years with Sick of Life. So, I don't know. They just feel like that music, someone in that place thinks that the music's very motivating for recruit commercials, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know, I'm an American boy, so it's not, I'm proud of it.
You're proud of recruiting your fans into the military?
Oh, no. Let me turn my f***ing words around, you.
This is Jay Babcock is with us in the studio. That was an interview that you did for print. That was from, you didn't do that for the radio.
I did it, that's right, I did it for print. We were going to run it in the magazine, and then 2 days, you know, you heard what happened. And then a couple days later, the record went to number one, and we decided to put the interview out over the internet.
Okay.
Because the record was at number one.
Sure.
We have this, yeah.
And it's so weird, because I don't even know, I never even heard of Godsmack, but I remember seeing this guy around. And on the news and stuff. That was probably because of this.
Possibly. I guess he went on CNN Headline News later to sort of clarify where he stands on things. But, yeah, Godsmack are a huge band. They've sold millions of records. If you live somewhere between the coasts, you've probably encountered them, from passing by trucks and,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. They've sold millions of records. They're not a very influential or band, not a very important band in any way, but they sort of, they're sort of that second tier of copycat bands that sound like the other band that you really like.
So, and they're like 50. I mean, these guys are not these guys are not young guys. They've clearly been at the game for a long time. But that's not really the issue. When you called him, you knew were you gunning for this? Is this what you were looking for out of him?
I've been looking to talk with Godsmack for 3 years, and the opportunity came up. And I wanted to discuss with them why they were using their letting their music be used by the Navy to recruit kids. I want to talk to them about some of the state pro-war statements that he had made to the press in 2003, and I wanted to talk to him about some of the concerts they were giving in arenas in 2003 that, to my, from the descriptions, read like they were war rallies.
I think you're right on about all of it. And you can link to all this stuff at markmaron.com to see the full sort of layout of, you can see the transcript of this, of the conversation at Arthur Magazine. We're going to play another clip from the interview. We have Jay Babcock in the studio, and we're going to explore this because there were some interesting elements that he was trying to dismiss this as is something like, you know, he'd been offered other advertising opportunities, but, you know, he couldn't disagree with this one. And it's really jingoistic, creepy stuff, and this guy was trying to evade Jay's questions. We'll get into it a little more with Jay Babcock from Arthur Magazine after this. This is the Mark Maron Show. Here's some more Godsmack.
Hey!
All right.
Godsmack's in the studio.
No, they're not.
Oh, they're not. I'm sorry.
The guy that took Godsmack to task,
yeah,
Jay Babcock from Arthur Magazine, is in the studio.
Just wishful thinking.
Well, you know, I listen to this kind of music, and I hear what they're doing. I hear what it is. This kind of music does exemplify a certain strange testosterone-oriented hostility. But you're basically, when you went at him, Jay, when you went at Sully Erna, to justify or to explain himself for selling his band out for the U.S. military to use in their recruiting commercials, he was not really able to, you know, with any, he tried to evade your question in a way. He tried to validate himself.
Well, I suppose he did, and he had a couple of reasons why he said that they had given the music to the military or licensed the music. But I think what the real deal was is that he was unwilling to think about the consequences of what happens to someone in the last 3 or 4 years when they join the military.
Mm-hmm.
What actually are they up? What goes on with them after they join? And maybe that's something we should think about before we license our music to a commercial that advises them that it's in their best interest to join. You know, that might be something
sure.
of interest to somebody.
Yeah, and it also seems to me, though, that he kept claiming that, like, I'm no political expert. And that people that do that, that think it's not their right to be critical of their government, that is the first, you know, indication that they're culturally retarded. And that also, that he was unabashedly pro-military, and he was trying to claim he wasn't, so he didn't, because he didn't want to alienate the listeners that didn't know that about him.
I suppose that's probably right. I mean, I think the military Godsmack connection is pretty known.
Yeah.
Like, their fans know it, because
right.
when they go to the concerts, there's military slogans up on the screen, and there's airplanes and missiles flying around, and he didn't want to cop to that, but we have references from fans and critics and people who had been to the shows and said that's what was going on. We even have some of the, you know, he didn't want to talk about that, and he didn't want to talk about, he kept saying, like, we're not a political band, but he had actually endorsed President Bush for president in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And he had actually said he was a lifelong Republican, and he'd been, when he was asked in 2003 by MTV News what he thought, you know, war, going to war, invading and occupying Iraq was a good thing to do, needed to be done. So he actually had positions on this stuff, and all I wanted to do was explore them with him, and he ran away with his tail between his legs.
It sounded like he really didn't even think about what he was saying, though, or any of his opinions. He didn't have anything to back it up. He was kind of...
He does, though. He was ignorant, but he's reactionary ignorant. Like, he believes that this war is right. He believes in the U.S. military. You can hear it in what he's saying. And I think when he was The truth of the matter is he sold his band out to the military. And in the interview, he says, like, I wouldn't do it for Maybelline or something. And you sort of call him on that he had some sort of integrity around who he was willing to sell it out to. So he made this choice. And I just think it was a very interesting trajectory for the interview that made the connection that if you have this many fans who are really predominantly high school kids, that you're leading them into war by encouraging this type of behavior. And these recruiters are predators, man, and you know that.
We know that, but a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. They think like the a lot of people seem to think, especially Godsmack fans and the military nerds who I've been hearing from for the last 3 weeks since this interview occurred, you know, they've been saying, you know, everyone who goes in the military knows what they're doing. No one is they're all volunteers. If you're persuaded to go in the military because of a commercial, the military won't take you.
Right.
These are like these sort of, you guys are looking at me like, that's crazy. But, you know, that's how at least 30-40% of this country thinks.
Well, the interesting thing about the interview, too, is he brought up that issue. Is like, he accused you of being the kind of guy that would believe that Judas Priest caused those kids to kill themselves.
A total red herring.
Yeah,
but
it is
he doesn't
a red
know
herring.
What a red herring is.
Right.
So that, you know, the only way to talk about that is just to say, you know, well, there's a reason there's not Jimmy Buffett music on your military commercials.
Right.
And I think about what that reason is.
Because Iraq is not Margaritaville.
Yeah, right. it's like, think about, advertising has an effect.
Yeah.
Your music has an effect.
Yeah.
How are you going to use your music then? Are you going to use it to persuade people to go over to Iraq?
Right.
Kids who've never been on an airplane?
Right.
That's their first trip? I mean, that's literally who is going. You guys know, but like, it's news to these dudes.
But I think it was brilliant on your part to make that connection, because he literally used the words in his interview, in a question. He said he recruited new listeners.
Yeah.
That you asked who his fans were, and he says, I think we're recruiting like 18 to 20-year-olds now. And like he was using language, and you turned it on him, because I think that if the fan base is who you say it is, if there
who
are
he
people,
says it was,
right,
actually, yeah.
If people are leaning towards this sort of testosterone-oriented military image, that they may be able to detach from the war, in any other time like it was 10 years ago or something, in the sense that that's just what we stand for. Megadeth is Megadeth, and the iconography is what it is. But once you cross that line, it becomes used in a commercial. They are doing that. They are leading their flock to death. They are helping to do that.
Not just to death, but to kill.
To kill as well.
As well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're finding out. Or we already knew, but now it's coming out, like the amount of massacring that's been going on over
awful.
There.
Yeah.
It's not just one. There's a lot more that are going to be exposed.
I read about that today, that there's other investigations going on.
Yeah. And, I mean, the other thing is when he said, we're not a political band, I don't want to talk, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is I wasn't asking like these very technical questions about what's the history of American relations with East Timor.
Mm-hmm.
I was just bringing up a few statistics about how many Americans have died and how many Iraqis have died. I didn't bring up arcane knowledge.
Sure.
I brought up common knowledge stuff that should be discussed after you've been advocating for a war for 3 years. Let's talk about it.
That's a classic right-wing cop-out, though. That is a classic Rush Limbaugh talking point to where, who am I to talk about politics? I'm not a political expert. Well, you're an American citizen, but they dismiss that because that's complete right wing crap. That whole point of view of sort of like, I'm not qualified, and who are you? How are you qualified to talk about politics? So tell us about this CD you guys are getting behind and putting out.
Right. This is this is a total coincidence, although it's sort of a continuation of the magazine's ethos. I mean, we've been an anti-war publication since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
We ran all sorts of editorial. We gave whole issues over to the idea that the war was fundamentally imperialist, expansionist, wrong-headed, and wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
However you want to look at it, we were right.
Mm-hmm.
And but now the wars kept going, and we decided an artist came to us, Josephine Foster, and said, I want to put out a benefit CD. She's a musician. She said, I want to curate a benefit CD that will benefit organizations that counsel kids who are being recruited by the military.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that's a great idea. And she came to us in like November or December. And it's going to be out next probably in 6 weeks, eight weeks. It'll be on.
You'll make it available through the website.
Exactly, through arthurmag.com, yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I had not seen the magazine until Charlie turned me on to it. And, you know, it's a great magazine. I enjoyed Douglas Rushkoff writes for it. You have a lot of interesting people right. writing for it. There was actually a column in there about the virtues of vinegar. And there's also Douglas Rushkoff did an interesting column about is the left, are progressives, him being a progressive, you know, vulnerable to a type of propaganda that clouds their vision as well, which I found to be engaging. And the whole layout and the whole agenda of the magazine is to embrace independent thought and independent expression when it comes to music.
Yeah, and I guess that's something that the Godsmack people weren't ready for, although they invited us to do this interview. It seemed to be a shock to them that an anti-war publication would speak to their client about the war, which is the only interesting thing about that band. It was their support for the war. We're not going to talk about the music.
Well, he's just a lughead. He thought he was just on some sort of press junket. Let's hear a little bit more of that interview, if we could. He's classic New England lughead.
Oh, come on. Oh, like that.
Well, I have a quote from here where you said, we've always been supportive of our country and our president, whereas a lot of people, I thought, and you said this in 2003, to MTV News, he said, a lot of people, I thought, lashed out pretty quickly at what we did, and I thought the government did everything pretty cleanly and publicly as possible.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That was my opinion at the time. The whole war thing and trying to keep us up to date, like, if you remember back in other wars, we didn't have the opportunity to follow it through the media and CNN and the news and live updates and that kind of thing. And I thought that, for the most part, you know, we were allowed to follow it as best we could through the media sources that were feeding us information.
You didn't think the media was being controlled by the military?
Well, it could be. I don't know. I'm not
you
in
did,
the military.
You didn't look into it?
Listen, are you a f***ing government expert?
I know. I'm not telling people to go join the military and then not knowing what the military is doing.
Wow. He's just a classic ditto head. He's just a classic, you know, doesn't think for himself, you know, screw them, racist, ditto head.
Right? The thing is, and he's also a millionaire.
Yeah.
And there's a class thing to this, because who's joining the military?
Kids, poor kids.
Poor kids.
Have no choice. We were just talking to Dave Diane in here, a second ago, about how they make an incentive. They most of the people that are in today's military are there because it's the only way they can earn a living and get health benefits.
That's why the reenlistment numbers are so good right now.
Exactly.
In times, yeah.
And he represents, I hope, what is diminishing. I think that people who think the way that he thinks have got to be considered delusional at this point. When you get these emails from these kids who are pro-military, what does it strike you? I mean, what characterize their psychology?
Well, I wouldn't, you know, we got emails from all sorts of people. We got email from Godsmack fans. We got email from military people. There were some people who thought the interview was some sort of ambush, that I asked questions that weren't fair to ask, and that he wasn't prepared, as if I had a cheat sheet there.
I
was going to quiz him on stuff, which is far from the case. You can read the transcript. The other thing that they say is that Godsmack's music is very it's in a commercial. Well, who does something because of a commercial, you know?
Yeah.
But those are mainly the arguments we were getting. And some were saying, you know, they just didn't understand the discussion. They thought that I was saying there should be no military, you know, these sorts of things. Or many of them said, you know, I'm pro-military because I'm still pro-war, even though it's not cool anymore, because, you know, after 9/11. And so I would write back to
them. Ditto
heads. Yeah, I'd write back to them. I'd just say, what is the connection? Show me. Get your facts straight. Cite your sources. Show me where this happens. And once you dialogue with them in a very stern way, stern, condescending, fatherly way, like just like George Lakoff says, they just fall right in, especially on email.
Because you mean they'll buckle under the
absolutely
strict
buckle.
Father
they,
model?
Absolutely. Would you believe it?
Yeah, sure.
They actually do. And so it's in, you know, liberals. Yeah, that's the news.
That's how you got. Well, certainly now, I've been saying lately that that the right, these kids and some of these, you know, the people that are just morons who are just propagating propaganda have nothing to stand on anymore. It's very easy.
Well, we got to remember that the average adult in America reads at the eighth grade level.
Right. But they can't defend whatever that was being fed with them. It must not be that far away that you can take them down a notch. Did you find? Yeah, it sounds like you found.
What you do is that they respect someone who can cite a source.
That's all you need? One source?
Yeah, or you give them a couple. So you say, like, you don't know about what we've been, the United States has been up to since World War II.
Because everyone
goes with, like, the Hitler analogy. You're like, we had to stop Saddam Hussein because of, you're one of those guys who didn't want to go after Hitler.
That's crazy.
And I'd say, well, what has the U.S. done for us, for the world, for democracy since World War II? I'll give you the list,
right.
And I'll send you the website, and you can look at it for yourself. And then they do, and then they come back, and you say, why don't you go watch Operation Dreamland? You can get it on Netflix.
That's great.
And they kind of just go, oh, you're talking to me like a person, an adult, yeah.
Well, know? They're being trained to argue with points, with complete propaganda. So I imagine if you just shed any light into the reality of the situation with other documents.
Yeah, that's the important thing. The other important thing is not to trade insults with them and not to take any of their red herrings.
Yeah.
And not to, if they send, say, ad hominem attacks, you don't say, that's an ad hominem attack. You know, go to the back of debate class.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know what that means.
Right.
So you just have to go straight facts. And tell them to get their facts straight.
Yeah, go to Arthur Magazine. Wait, how was it? ArthurMag.com?
ArthurMag.com, yeah.
And see the transcript of an example. Because I could feel you feeling your way through that and keep pushing forward. It was really great. Thanks for being with us, Jay Babcock. Hope to talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
You take care. We're going to come back, and Dave Dayan's going to come back in here. We're going to... No, now look at him. Now, you can just come in and hang out and do the jokes. We'll be back in a second.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his short order news coming up next. Amen. Make sure to lock up.
And now he's a kumquat full of fury, Mark Maron.
Wow. It's a great show. It's been a great show. Jay Babcock was on. That was amazing. Mike Betcher was on. I'm actually teasing the show backwards. We're going to do your poetry tomorrow. Dave Dayan from DaveDayan.com, blogger, comedian, is here to tell us a story.
Very funny, man.
He's back. So you did Kimmel, and what happened?
I did a little bit part on Kimmel that I was asked to do just to be in the audience.
Yeah.
For a sketch of Todd Glasses.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And... the funny part about it was, 19 years earlier, Todd Glass performed at my bar mitzvah.
Get out of here. You got to be kidding me.
He only did it once.
Yeah. It was the only bar mitzvah he ever did?
The only one he ever did.
And it was yours?
And it was mine.
That
he
is
he was
hilarious.
Like 21. We're in Philadelphia. That's where I'm from.
Yeah.
He was real young at the Comedy Works out there.
Uh-huh.
And he did like a 50-minute set at my bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And he made fun of me during the set, of course, because I'm the bar mitzvah boy.
Right.
So 20 years later, I'm in a sketch on live television where he's making fun of me. Like, I was just a plant in the audience, and he's making fun of me. So nothing's changed.
That's hilarious.
In 20 years. And I made more money in the bar mitzvah.
Well, maybe if you were performing on Kimmel, you would have made a few bucks. Did they pay you, though? They gave you
They did. Work? Yeah, it was scale. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Have you talked to Todd about it? Did he remember?
Yeah, totally.
Your parents are sort of like, it'd be a nice idea. He would love it if you came. Right?
They just went down to the Comedy Works and said, hey, we want a comic. Our boy likes comedy.
Right, sure.
And they wanted a comic. They brought him down. And it just happened to be him. I mean, it could have been anybody. And I don't think anybody else came out of there.
Anybody willing to do a bar mitzvah.
And he had a miserable time.
I can't even imagine it.
Just a bunch of people who wanted food
in my
family.
Private parties are interesting. It can go either way. I had somebody book me for a private party on a farm in Florida. And she kept coming at me. She's like, my husband's surprise party. He loves you guys. Come down. You ended up having lunch with her and her husband, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dorothy in Oregon. Mm-hmm. But I eventually went because she was so persuasive, and it was actually a lovely time, and they were very they actually wanted a political rally more than the party.
Yeah, but what really happened?
Well, I don't want to go into it, but it was wild. Dave Dayan, thanks again for coming back in. We're going to do this again. Let's do this now. Hang out a minute. We got we don't want you to be caught off guard or misinformed or uninformed. Here's a second.
Ill-informed?
Yeah, that's it. Edition of the Short Order News. We'll do poetry tomorrow, right?
That's right.
In a major policy shift, Condoleezza Rice says the United States is prepared to hold direct talks with Iran on its nuclear program if Iran first agrees to stop activities that could lead to a bomb. There's been talk that Bush might attack Iran with nuclear weapons, but Washington insiders say it's just a bluff and it would only happen if it looks like he's going to lose the House. This is the best joke we had on that one. topic. Delighted.
It's, you know, it's a hard topic.
I know. Who chose him?
I do. All right. You know, so, hey, wait a minute. You can't just lay a bomb like that and then go on.
I love you. Rising levels of greenhouse gases are accelerating poison ivy growth, a new study reports. Who would have thought the coasters would be prophets? We are going to need an ocean of calamine lotion.
See, that's a good story.
That is a good
joke.
Chose
that one, too.
I like that one. Dutch pedophiles are... Can you go wrong with this one?
I don't know.
She had four pages of this one.
That's why I chose that one.
Already it's funny. Dutch pedophiles are launching a political party to push for a cut in the legal age for sexual relations to 12 from 16. It's true. And the legalization of child pornography and sex with animals. The party believes child pornography should be allowed as long as the child keeps one foot on the floor.
I can't believe you didn't go with my orangutan joke.
I'll do it now. Hold on.
Man,
where is it on the second page?
This is waiting. Where the hell is it? Taking too long for you to get to the ring.
Here we go. A Dutch opinion poll published Tuesday showed that 82% wanted the government to do something to stop the new party, while the remaining 18% were busy declawing a new shipment of orangutans.
Because they're doing it with monkeys.
Yeah.
Now, that's hilarious. Well, thanks for screwing up the setup on that anyway.
Oh, that was the problem there?
Tomorrow we got some great guests. Don't forget to listen in. I'm Jim Earle. This is the Jim Earle Show.
Greg Palast will be here tomorrow. Bob Weir. Dude,
Bob Weir?
Yeah. Yeah, Bob Weir from the Grateful Dead. Daniel Pinchbeck, author of 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl. I think it's how you pronounce it.
Quetzalcoatl.
Say it again. It's your show. It's Jim Earle Show. Thank you again, Dave Dayan.
Thank you.
Did you say Quetzalcoatl?
Quetzalcoatl, I think.
Good night, sheeple. Quetzalcoatl?